Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 205. Happy Monday to you. So you listen to the show, you know that I'm a 58 going on 12, smart, dorky nerd, and my fellow nerd dork Wheeler.
With the one grown up in the room, Rachel.
We both love ancient aliens and we love all that kind of stuff. But we're both smart and skeptical, but it's like a guilty pleasure, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And
but also the real stuff, too.
Of course.
You know, the real archaeology, the
Graham
work that's
Hancock
been done.
Hancock recently had a series thing on Netflix, Ancient Civilizations. I watched a couple episodes. We think you watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day I saw an article about or by a couple of real scientists saying, like, yeah, I get it. It's fun, but it's kind of dangerous here because there's real science to be done. So I told Andrew to get me one of these guys. So John Hoops is a professor of social and behavioral science, anthropology at KU, and he joins us now. Professor, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave, and to the others as well. It's really a pleasure to be here.
And not that you're going to care, but my daughter just declared she's going to KU next year.
Woo. Oh, great. A budding Jayhawk. Good for her.
Yeah. I'll have her look you up. You're like, who the hell are you? Okay, John, so you start anywhere you want. I have always had a deep interest in this kind of stuff. Growing up, I grew up like a couple of miles away from Cahokia Mounds, and so that was always a big deal to me, and I didn't realize how big a deal that was even internationally until I was a grown-up. I do love the ancient aliens. I love the conspiracy theories. Göbekli Tepe. I love all this stuff. I love the Graham Hancock. But I'm educated enough to take it in with a grain of salt. Tell me your issue with this stuff.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Cahokia, because I am floored every time that I ask my students at KU if they know about Cahokia Mounds.
Hmm.
And you would be amazed at the number of students just over here in your next door state who've never heard of the place. It's my impression that a lot of Americans don't know what Cahokia Mounds is, and I think that's a big deficiency in American education, is the amazing archaeological places that we have here in the United States or in the Americas or around the world. In general, one of my biggest problems with the way Graham Hancock presents things is that his audience is not educated enough or aware enough to be able to evaluate whether what he's saying makes sense or whether it's completely absurd, simply because we have been deficient on archaeological education in general.
John, you know, this reminds me of when the movie JFK by what's his name? Help me out. The
Oliver Stone. Yeah.
When that movie came out, I was young and dumb enough that I walked out and I went, I didn't know any of that stuff. Like, I thought I was watching a documentary. So I would have been one of those people who is insufficiently educated to know the difference. Also, parenthetically, John, it makes me sad. My mom still lives in Illinois. It makes me sad every time I drive to see her because we have built trash mounds about four times the size of Monk's Mound at Cahokia within 500 yards of it, and I think that should have been illegal, because now when people show up to see it, they're like, oh my god, it's so much bigger than I thought. No, that's just Pampers. I've always hated that. I just thought that was a really bad move. But anyway, back to Graham Hancock, please.
Okay, well, I'm happy to answer questions that you have about Graham Hancock. Just to put things in context a bit, I'm a little bit older than you, Dave. I just turned 64. And when I was in high school, one of the films that I went to see my freshman year in high school, I think, was called Chariots of the Gods.
Oh yeah, version
of Eric von Däniken.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And I have a confession to make. I was into ancient astronauts back in the early 70s. And actually, the very first research paper I ever wrote in high school, which was for an English class in the 10th grade, was about the lost continent of Atlantis.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
I started the research project as an Atlantis believer, and by the time I was done with the research, which was in January of 1974, I was persuaded that archaeology was the way, and I wanted to be an archaeologist. But I could tell the difference between the real thing and the pseudo archaeology. I became an Atlantis skeptic as a result of my research. So I'm coming from a very similar nerdy background.
Yeah.
The difference is that I decided I wanted to become an archaeologist when I was in high school in the 1970s, and I've stayed with that ever since then.
So, Kevin, and I'm just referencing back to something that you said last week, and you can take it up. But, John, last week, Kevin here, one of my partners, was saying that the dates for when we did this and that, the dates for when Homo sapiens first arrived, when we mastered fire, when we cooked food, none of those dates are getting sooner. They're all getting older. Can you talk a bit about that, that with each generation of anthropologists and archaeologists, we seem to be moving these dates backwards, if you agree that that's true?
Well, the dates are not changing. The dates are what they always have been. It's just our knowledge of those dates that changes.
Yeah, yeah.
It should not be a surprise to anyone that it's much, much harder to find something that is very, very old than to find something that's more recent. So it takes more research, it takes more field work to be able to find out whether something is in fact older. So that ages of things are not changing at all, it's just our knowledge that's improving.
Good point.
How fast do you think that's happening? And also, is this going to continue? Because it feels like lately, and I'm not talking about Graham Hancock or Ancient Aliens or any of those, I mean like legitimate research papers are being filed, that we're finding things out, as you point out, that the dates aren't changing, but we are finding out more that either we as human beings or our ancient ancestors were capable of things that we didn't think they were at those particular times. And it feels like lately, and I mean last 4 or 5 months, there have been 3 or 4 or 5 of those types of things out there.
I think a lot of it has to do with just what our awareness is. I mean, we become much more aware of shootings and floods and earthquakes and disasters and tsunamis simply because we now have access to much more information around the world. So some of it is just a perception of what is being learned and how it's being spread by the media. So we shouldn't confuse our awareness of things with what their actual occurrence is. I mean, science has been continuing every single day. That's what scientists do. With regard to dates, our technology for dating is getting better all the time. I mean, we started off with tree ring dates, and then we developed radiocarbon dating, and now we have several different types of radiometric dating that can be done with different isotopes. We also can get much, much better radiocarbon dates now using things like accelerator mass spectrometry, AMS, and other methods that can use smaller amounts of carbon or organic material to get much more accurate dates. So the dating that we do now is completely different from the dating that was done 50 years ago, and we're constantly improving and expanding that. So that should not be a surprise to anybody. Our science is advancing, and just as we're learning more about things that are farther away in the universe, like with the new space telescope, we're learning more about the ancient past with the instruments and techniques that we use.
John, how far, now you're going to feel like you're defending your dissertation or something here, but how far back can you comfortably say that modern humans, as in if they walked into my studio right now wearing jeans and a T-shirt, I would never notice. And as far as if they were born today and were educated in our modern society, they could go be an accountant or something. How far back can we trace humans that were basically just like us?
300,000 years.
Wow. Wow.
300,000 years ago, they were anatomically modern Homo sapiens. Living in Morocco, which is where the earliest evidence now. We I would say 10 years ago, it was Ethiopia, and it was 200,000 years ago. So in the past 10 years or so, actually maybe a little bit more, we've been able to push it back 100,000 years. So for a long time, I taught that the earliest modern Homo sapiens were 200,000. It's now 300,000.
Wow.
It's staggering. I mean, because we really, I know what the number means, but I can't even imagine 300,000 years. So, John, one of the things that intrigues me the most, obviously it does you as well, is why 5,000, 4,000, 2,000, depending on where you want to draw the line, years ago, suddenly it's like we woke up, which a lot of, like, I have one friend who's a very devout Christian young earther, and he's like, well, that's when God breathed the breath of life. I'm an agnostic, so I don't go by that. Very science-minded. But why for basically 300,000 years did it seem that we kind of did the same thing, and then all at once we just got real smart?
Because we didn't, Dave. People want simple explanations. They fear complexity. They don't want to know the details. Nothing happens suddenly. That's a fabrication.
So what, say, in the 5,000 to 10,000 years before we have written records, were we doing that would help us to understand that, like, oh, okay, I see how this was pretty gradual? Because, of course, it feels like it, because that's what we've always kind of been taught.
Right.
Well, we have thousands of archaeological sites from all over the world that help us to understand what's been happening during that time period. There are people like Graham Hancock who profit from telling the public things that are not accurate, such as this has just been discovered and it's completely changed the field and archaeologists are baffled. Well, that's simply not true. We knew about the culture that built Göbekli Tepe since the 1950s. It was discovered at a site called Jericho by an archaeologist named Kathleen Kenyon. It was called the Pre-Pottery Neolithic A. That's the name of the culture at Göbekli Tepe. It's the same culture that built a tower and a wall at Jericho. We've known about it for at least 50 years. No, not 50. We've known about it since at least the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Since at least the 1950s.
So a bigger picture, like looking at, you know, because I know we're getting better, as you point out, the technology getting better for doing these types, and I'm calling it an exploration, even if that's not really accurate.
That's accurate.
Great, because it kind of ties into the question. We hear from marine biologists, for example, that we don't know very much about the ocean. We only know, whatever, 2%, 5%, 10%. We've only explored a certain amount. Based on your experience in South and Central America, based on the research you've done, how much do we actually know, or if we can give a rough estimate, are we at 50%? Are we at 80, 20?
How full is the picture?
Yeah.
How do you estimate the percentage of something that you don't know?
Yeah, you dumbass.
Dang it! I ruined it.
You embarrassed me in front of a KU guy.
But let me pose a question that I don't think many people have posed. We have had a fleet of nuclear submarines since the 1960s. Do you really think that the Navy has not mapped the continental shelves of the United States and the Americas and the world in enormous detail, and that the Russians, who also have nuclear subs, have not done that as well? We know an enormous amount about the geography and topography of the continental shelves and the coastlines of the world. Is there a reason why that information hasn't been released? Is there a reason why that information isn't public? Hell yeah. It's because it's used by nuclear subs to do their stuff. So we have an enormous amount of information. I mean, Graham Hancock says we don't know anything about these continental shelves. We don't know what could be there. There could be lost cities. There could be all kinds of things. That's simply not true. Does the Navy have a reason for not revealing all of the information about everything they know along the coastlines? Of course they do. But a lot of that information is accessible to oceanographers. You know, this is 2022. We've mapped the bottom of the ocean several times in great detail. There are no missing civilizations down there. Now, that's not to say that there aren't sunken urban settlements. There are. There's been sea level rise. Actually, it's a combination of subsidence and subsidence and sea level change. I mean, sea level has been rising, you know, slowly for a really long time. But river deltas are things that sink. Think about the Mississippi Delta. You know, the mouth of the Delta is constantly submerging because of the weight of the sediments that are carried by the Missouri and the Mississippi down there. Same thing happens at the mouth of the Amazon, and the same thing happens at the mouth of the Nile. There are settlements that were in the Nile Delta that are now underwater. We know about a number of those, and that's because of the subsidence of the weight of the sediments at the Nile Delta. So, yes, there are settlements that are underwater, but actually most of them are underwater because of subsidence, not because of any sudden change that happened at the end of the Ice Age. They're much more recent subsidence than that. And there are a number of places that are like that. Heraklion, for example, is one example.
John, are there a couple of questions about archaeology, anthropology that you or your colleagues are working on that, like, boy, I hope I live long enough till we figure this one out? If that question makes any sense, you know, that there are things that we just don't know yet, but we will know, and you really want to be around when we make that discovery.
I think all of us do. It really depends on what our area of specialization is. I specialize in the archaeology of Southern Central America and Northern South America, but also the Caribbean Basin. And one of the things that I'm working on right now is understanding the archaeology of the Caribbean so that we can get to a similar level of understanding, perhaps similar. We don't have the writing systems, but I like to refer to the Caribbean as the American Mediterranean. Think about how much we know about the Mediterranean and all of the different cultures and civilizations around the Mediterranean. We don't know nearly as much about the Caribbean. So that's something I would love to see happen, is a better understanding of the Caribbean as an area of interaction among the Mayas and the Chibchan-speaking peoples and the Arawaks of the Antilles. That's one of the things I'm interested in. That's what I work on all the time.
John, we're out of time, but I'd love to have you back on when we have more time and when I can make sure Kevin Wheeler's not here to embarrass me.
So. Hey, it was a dumb question that got a good answer.
Thank you, John.
Well, you're welcome. I'd have you talk anytime at all.
Thank you, Professor. We appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
225 DGS. I got really mad last night. You know when you get mad and there's not jack crap you can do about it? And Nick and I had talked about Phoebe and Maureen are going on a senior trip with a bunch of other moms and daughters, which is kind of crap if you think about it. And they're going to Mexico. And
oh, that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, for some people.
Wonder if they're going to find out about ancient cultures.
Maybe. So Nick and I were going to go down to spring training.
Yeah.
And it just makes me so mad. Like, I looked at every site, looked at Southwest, I looked at flying to Fort Lauderdale and then taking the train, I looked at flying into Palm Beach, and basically you can't get there from here direct at all.
Pretty much.
And it's still going to be about $800 a piece.
Yeah.
So I'm mad at that. Yeah. I'm like, you should be able to fly to Europe for $800. And look, I can put it on a credit card. I can write a check for it. But just because you can doesn't mean you want to.
Yeah.
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 And it's not long enough to justify driving, although he and I love to drive. Anyway, it's just one of those, I just get pissed that somebody, I'm not sure who, but I like to kick him in the nuts, ruined St. Louis to such a degree. I think it's generations of leaders and politicians were idiots and selfish and just kept getting elected for the wrong reasons. And we used to be a hub. We used to have TWA. Used to be able to fly anywhere direct for a reasonable price. And now it feels like we're Poughkeepsie. It just feels like we're landlocked when you try to travel. It just makes me angry.
Hmm. Yeah. It was always a challenge. I mean, I know that when I was going down there, this was years ago. I haven't gone down probably since 2013 for spring training. But, I mean, it was always a challenge to find the best path. Like, how do you get there without a stop? And it was possible then. I haven't even looked lately, so it may not even be possible now. Is it, or are they all booked? Is that part of the problem? Like, it's spring break or whatever.
I just know that everything, yeah. Like, if you fly at 5 in the morning and get there at 10 at night, you can go for a couple $100 per way. But if you want to go during the middle of the day, and I think the fastest it is like 6 hours with your layovers and stuff. Plus, I know I've lost all confidence in the people I used to have confidence in, like people who ran airlines and airports and flew planes. Now, if it says I have a 2-hour layover in Charlotte, yeah. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
have to factor into my math whether it's worth it to pay your ass $1,000 to spend 12 hours in Charlotte.
Yeah, that's the big question for me. Everything related to flights now is the risk factor of delays and cancellations and problems.
Isn't this probably one of, like, the highest demand times to fly down there, though?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's got to factor into it.
We also looked at Amtrak. It was, like, $1,500 apiece, and it takes 56 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, as a drive, you're talking...
We're like Steve Martin and John Candy at this point.
That would be kind of funny if you filmed it.
.234 DGS, happy Monday, happy MLK Day. Hope you have the day off and doing something fun. Before we get into audio, Wheels, I watched your movie, The Way Back.
Yeah.
Amazing. True stories, you know.
Visually pretty awesome.
I loved it.
That was from the Sweet 16 about like movies where nature is
a... Yeah.
How'd that play, that part of it,
yeah.
to you?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. We discussed how the ending... They didn't wrap it up the way they should have.
Yeah, too fast.
But anyway, you know, anyway. So these people walk, I think, 4,000 miles. They escape from a gulag in Siberia. They cross snowy mountains and deserts, and it's a true story. It's just absolutely amazing. And just what they went through and how dire the world was and how it was in the gulag and the concentration camps. And I was thinking, this is like 1944. Like, my mom was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, as we speak, people are going through similar things in Ukraine.
Yep.
'Cause I always think of true suffering as being the olden days. And it's really not.
No.
It's just that we're fortunate enough to live in a country and an area and have jobs where we suffer. We don't suffer like that.
Yeah, we're separated from a lot of that. You mentioned Ukraine. I think you could pick out lots of the continent of Africa, some of the subcontinent Asia. There are plenty of places, and I'm sure there are tons of places like this in China where people are just completely suffering. North Korea has to be a hellscape for a lot of the citizens that live there. And I'm sure it's true in a lot of Central and South America, too, where you have corrupt governments or drug cartels taking over parts of the territory that you're in. Yeah, that's a good point, because we think of those things as being so far in the past, but they are, and they are for us. I mean, when's the last time we, as the United States, like, had that on our home soil, had that kind of difficulty and suffering? Was it the Great Depression?
Probably.
But it's not exactly the same, but got to be similar, right? I mean, poverty, early death, people sick. Yeah, yeah. Misery.
Mm-hmm.
Just general daily misery.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
And you always put yourself in that position. Like, I've never been in combat. I don't know whether I would be a hero or a coward, because I've never been tested
there,
that way. And if I had to walk 4,000 miles.
Yeah, I mean, for people that haven't seen it, this is not a spoiler or anything. I mean, it's part of the selling point of the movie. is that they leave a gulag in Siberia, and they go through Russia, through Mongolia, so they cross the Gobi Desert. From there, they get into Nepal, I think it was, and then from there, they have to cross the Himalayas to get to India. Hmm. Like, and now you wouldn't have to go. I mean, I guess you might if you were a fugitive, right? Because you can't just show up in a village and like help us. Well, they're going to turn you in, you know, at least when you are still in Russia. But one thing that stunned me about that movie was how few people they ran into covering that much ground. Like how few cities they actually ran into. You went from Siberia to India, and most of it is just land.
Tell you this, Russians are kind of dinks. Seems like they go all the way back, man. Just jerks. When's the last time Russians were cool?
I don't know.
Where they're just like, hey, what's up?
That's a good question. Probably, I don't know. I don't know anything, but I mean, like, I don't know. I only know of Russia, you know, in the communist days. I don't know what that country was like when it was, you know.
I may try and find a book on that.
Yeah, when it was, you know, I guess before the Bolshevik Revolution, before all of that. They clearly had problems, though, because that's why all that happened.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, they were revolting against something.
Right, right. I mean, it was poverty and, you know, being held down. Like, the average people are being held down by the richer classes. I mean, that's what's going to lead to any revolution.
Audio?
Sure. Who wants to go first?
I'm not comfortable with mine.
I got one that's something that's relevant to what we've talked about. I forgot to put it on the sheet, but I did send the audio to Tyler. Have you guys heard of, we've talked about quiet quitting and then quiet quitting on your partner and all that. So apparently the new thing that people are doing that millennials and Gen Z are talking about is rage applying.
Rage applying is the new quiet quitting. It's when you apply for a job that'll pay you more. What's wrong with that? You're just using the word rage to make it sound bad. Employees aren't clocking out to go to the bathroom in a new trend called Satan. People are allowed to apply to other jobs. Oh no, you're right. You owe your undying loyalty to the company that's underpaying you because they let you have a potluck last week. I say click submit on as many LinkedIn applications as you want. No one's reading them anyway. I swear to God, we're going to see articles in the future like young people aren't volunteering for the Hunger Games anymore thanks to a terrifying new TikTok phenomenon called wanting to live.
I really like that TikToker.
Yeah, he's like, I forget his name, but he's really funny. He always does it to that music, and it's always like a really sharp point. First of all, why are we creating terms for things that already exist? People apply for new jobs while they have jobs all the time. It's called trying to improve your station in life. This is normal. This is not a new Gen Z thing we need to come up with a name for. But he does make a greater point. And was it last week or the week before we talked about that idea of loyalty? Like you're,
I think it was last week.
You're expected to be loyal to your current employer. Well, why should you be if they're not paying you well enough? Mm. Like, there's nothing wrong with looking for better jobs when you're, especially when you're not in your career, right? Like, if you're in your career and this is a place where you think you might have future, you might have growth, that's not a normal just job. If it's just a job, why wouldn't you look for new things if you feel like, you know what, I need to make more money? It just seems like an odd thing to categorize. Like we used to call it, in my day, we called it getting ahead, trying to get ahead.
Now we call it rage applying.
And now it's rage applying. But this is a thing, like I looked it up. It's being covered by new, I got a story in front of me about rage applying on Forbes.com. Forbes.com is writing about this idea that, well, you know, the young people are aggressively sending out resumes to find jobs that will pay them more.
Aggressively.
What does that even mean? Yeah, like you're at your computer like, kick that stupid company that won't pay me more. Like, what? You're just trying to make more money. Like, why is this? Why do we got to make it weird? That's what I want to know.
So is there a bad element to it? Is there like anything, quote unquote, wrong with the way people are doing jobs these days? Anything at all to aggressive applying or quiet quitting?
I mean, I think you could say it was wrong if companies weren't doing the same thing right back at people. It's not like companies are like, I'm going to take care of you forever. It's not like that. It's pretty cutthroat out there. So I don't see any point to putting any sort of blame on the employee when the corporations do it too.
Yeah. And I feel like some of that, the rage thing, that's actually not other people calling that. That's what the people doing it are calling it because I think it makes them feel better.
Yeah.
You know, like, cool. I'm taking charge. It's rage. It's not like desperation or anything bad like
that. Although, I also don't blame employers for not wanting to hire someone who's been at four different places in 3 years.
Sure, I totally get it.
That's fair enough.
But the bottom line, though, is if you want stability in your business, you got to make it so that people want to stay there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, otherwise you just take, so that we use the restaurant industry all the time, right? Huge amount of turnover in the restaurant industry. I know when I worked in restaurants, I felt like we lost, you know, somebody on the wait staff, somebody at one of the servers, you'd lose one or two of them every couple weeks. Felt like there was always somebody being trained, always a new person coming in there. Some jobs are going to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're in that kind of a business as a company, you should know that. But if you're in a regular company setting and you want people to stick around, maybe you should make the conditions so that they want to stick around.
I have three pieces of audio, and I think they're all pretty fun. My first one is, I guess since Chris Wallace stopped doing Fox News Sunday, he's just like talking to various celebrities now.
Yeah.
And he just spoke with Andy Cohen. And I really like Andy Cohen. I don't think that's a secret. And it's not a secret that I watch The Real Housewives. I'm not claiming that it's like the top tier quality entertainment out there, but there are reasons people like to watch it. Millions of people in this country.
Ancient aliens.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of annoying me. Chris Wallace asked Andy Cohen if he was embarrassed by what he did.
Are you at all embarrassed by what you do?
No, I'm really not, because it makes so many people happy. I go back to me being in St. Louis as a kid watching all my children for years and years and years. And I loved all my children. It was just the great escape for me. And I think that this show represents that for a whole lot of people. And I think it can be really confrontational. It can sometimes be something that's a little difficult to swallow. But I think it's also about, in the real great moments, it's about being a wife and a mother and a sister and a friend and a whole lot more. So, yes, there's all that. And then there's a whole lot more.
I just like, good for him for sticking up for himself and pointing out the fact that it makes people happy. Like, you're not hurting anyone by watching.
I would feel differently if the state made us watch it.
Yeah, it'd be one thing. But it's just one more piece of entertainment out there. My next two pieces of audio are of President Biden, and he is back to doing some crazy stuff. Here he is singing happy birthday to someone and seemingly forgets their name as he's singing it. So we have like an audio service where you can look up different things, and I was looking up Biden, and it was like, President Biden flubs the name of the person he's singing happy birthday to. And I thought to myself, how bad could it be? It's pretty bad.
Well, look, my wife has a rule in her family. When somebody's birthday, you sing happy birthday. You ready? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Alan. Happy birthday to you.
What if the person's name really is Lavin?
Dear Baba.
Oh, you got to kind of respect that he just went for it. He was like, dear, happy birthday.
The day that Peter Ducey asked him the what were you thinking question, and the president said basically, hey, Joker, my Corvette's in there too. It didn't hit me as badly as it did yesterday. I'm watching like Meet the Press, and they play the sound again, and I'm just punching at the air. I'm just like, you got it. Why? Hey, man, you notice my Corvette's in there, too?
Yeah, and my garage is locked, by the way. My Corvette is locked up, too. My sweet, sweet Corvette.
You realize that my Steve Austin Mint in the box $6 million man is in there?
And the next one is just him doing a mic check. There's nothing like particularly funny about this. It just tickled me.
This is on. This is on. Hello, hello, hello.
Clearly on.
Hello, no ho. Okay.
Clearly the mic is on.
Let me make everyone in my audience mad. I feel like we've gone from a manipulative liar to a bumbling fool. Is this, and I get the game, money, billionaire, lifelong senator, but seriously? I'm not sure those are the two best people in this studio to be the president. $250 DGS. As you can tell, I can be kind of crusty. And
no.
Dave.
I was, I don't even know what it was, my phone, TikTok, something, but I saw like, hey, Ryan Reynolds goes in depth about Spirited Away, and I'm like, shut up. No one saw it, and anyone who did thought it was stupid, because it was, and you're just like cashing in. Rach, you talk about this a lot, like, you know, does Ben Affleck and Jennifer, J-Lo, do they really need the money to do the Dunkin' Donuts? And like, people just keep selling out. God, they keep disappointing me. Then I had an epiphany. I've never been offered enough money to sell out.
Right?
I'm in a glass house on this. I don't know what I would do if someone really came along. They're like, hey, Glover, you want $10 million? Just do this. Just do a podcast about chicken butts. You know, like, okay, I can do it. Like, you feel me? I'm being really judgmental about something I've never been tested on.
That's very mature of you, Dave.
Well, thank you, Rach.
I get it. It's also still, I mean, it's okay to still have that feeling like it's kind of weird when you're worth $400 million and you'll do something for a dumb commercial. You know, like, it's not wrong necessarily for them to do it. It just feels weird.
Yeah, it's like, when is enough enough?
Yeah, like, and you know, I hate to judge because, like, I think I said this last week. Maybe they donate that money to charity. I have no idea. But it's still a little, you know, when you're always like, people won't leave us alone. Well, then stop forcing yourself out there. Just do your work.
And not to just pick on Ben and J-Lo, but they're one of those couples where it's like, you guys, you've done all of this like super publicly. Like, don't complain about not having your privacy and then go do the Dunkin' commercial.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. We, at that point, we reserve the right to complain about you.
But it's a good point, Dave. It's a good point overall, because I don't think I've ever faced that either.
Right.
I don't even remember what Jennifer Aniston said. It wasn't the point of my point, but she said something over the weekend on Twitter that I thought was like, yeah, I see why you're saying that. It was kind of similar. It was kind of judging other stars for stuff, and then people just came for her, right? And I was thinking, why does anyone say anything anymore? I mean, when you don't have to.
I know, but I mean, don't you take a risk every day for 4 hours doing
this
show?
Yeah, but I have to.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I do. If I did something else, if I were a juggler, and
why would you post? Why would you post
anything?
Why
would I post anything?
Well, but like what you're talking about, though, is more why would you say things about other people that are your peers? Right? Like, how often would you go public and talk about other people in radio? Unless you're saying nice things.
I was also thinking...
That's a good point, Wheels.
Social media is just like your buddy who's a mean drunk.
Oh, I had something on the sheet about this. So Elon Musk tweeted, I'll be the one to bring him up today, tweeted, Instagram makes you depressed, Twitter makes you angry. Which one is better? And I was like, I mean, it's not like a smart thing to say or anything, but it does kind of get you thinking a little bit. Like, the different social media outlets have different effects on your emotional state, I guess. And Twitter doesn't make me mad anymore, but it used to really make me mad. Instagram doesn't really make me depressed, but I get why it makes other people depressed.
Yeah.
And why do we go back to these things that give us negative emotions?
That's a good point. That's the big question. But Twitter doesn't make us mad. Elon does. And some of the various people that post do. Like, it's not the app that does it. It's kind of like when people are like, I don't like the government. Well, the government's just a thing. It's just a series of titles. It's the human beings making decisions in those jobs that you don't like. I mean, they're like different things. Like, Twitter's great. It's a great piece of tech, and it's very useful.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people on there that are idiots or terrible or have bad intentions, and they use it for their own means.
Back when I was first in radio in 2000, before any of this, there was a St. Louis radio flame board, and it may still exist, but it was just, you know, all the, you know, just exactly what you would think. You know, this is the era of Stephen DC and J.C. Corcoran and all this stuff, and people would go on there and just like, I can't believe it. So I was the new kid in town, so I was the new whipping boy, and I can't believe this guy even has a job and all this stuff, and I would read it every day, and I would just wring my hands over it. And Rick Bayless, who is the program director there, is still a good friend of mine. I remember him looking me in the eye and saying, why would you continue to put your hand in this viper pit? Like, you know what you're going to get. You know that hardly any of these are people working at Central Hardware because they did an overnight shift for 2 months and then they got fired because they have no talent, and they're just mad at the world. What I'm trying to say is that was the old version of today's social media.
Yeah, all the message ports were brutal.
And it really made sense to me. I kept going there, but why am I
doing
this?
You're like, great point, Rick. Anyway, I have to get back to the message.
I gotta go back to the board.
I mean, I cut down on it, but it's true. Like, why do you keep punching yourself in the face?
Yeah.
I remember, might have been my first day actually on the job at KMOX. Our boss, Steve, we were just talking, and he probably doesn't even remember it, but he was like, here's the best advice I'll give you. Stay out of everything. You don't need to be in the middle of it. If there's stuff happening, this is really kind of like before Twitter blew up, right? This was just message boards and some of the other nonsense that can come up in our weird business. He goes, you don't have to be a part of it. Just stay out of all of it. You'll be happier. Couldn't have been more accurate. And now, you know, basically there's no rivalries. I have nobody that I'm like, ooh, that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's a friend. Everybody's somebody you can hang out with.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!